It's Thursday, April 29th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. According to a CNN poll, 71% of Americans who watched Joe Biden's speech to Congress last night said that it made them feel more optimistic about the direction of the country. The other 29% couldn't figure out how to change the channel back to Fox News. Speaking of which, Fox News' Chris Wallace gave President Biden high praise for his speech, saying, quote, "I think this is going to be a popular speech with the American public." Sounds like someone's not getting an invite to Hannity Spring Kegger this year. Tim Scott, the GOP's version of, "Hey, look, we have a black friend," said last night in his party's response to Joe Biden's address to Congress that America is not a racist country. You can completely understand why he would say that, considering how few Republican black senators get shot by the police. Twitter is blocking users from referring to Tim Scott as Uncle Tim for denying racism in the U.S., which is probably the right direction considering that Scott's relatives who have to call him Uncle Tim probably don't want him calling them these days. Philadelphia Phillies star player Bryce Harper was hit in the face by a 97-mile-per-hour fastball during yesterday's game. It's a shock because typically you have to get to at least third base before you have balls that close to your mouth. Gwyneth Paltrow said that she will be going pantsless to next Monday's Met Gala event. Let's just hope for everyone attending that Gwyneth cleans her goop before she goes. In last night's historic interview with Mr. MyPillow, Mike Lindell, Jimmy Kimmel told him that after reading both his book and Hunter Biden's, he believes the two men have a lot in common, which might be true except for the fact that Mike's daddy is no longer president since Hunter's took his job. Conservatives are criticizing Chrissy Teigen for misspelling Lori Loughlin's name in a tweet in which she takes a dig at Lori over the college admission scandal. To be fair, nobody paid to get Chrissy into a good school where she can learn to spell Loughlin. A TikTok video of Adam Sandler being turned away from an IHOP has gone viral. This must be a welcome change for Adam since it's usually the Motion Picture Academy and serious filmmakers who snub him. English rock group Genesis announced their first U.S. tour in 14 years. It's ironic that the news came from Genesis since it's usually in the New Testament where you hear stories about anyone coming back from the dead. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
So Joe's not going to be here tonight, so I guess I'm going to read the list of national days for him. Apparently today is National Shrimp Scampi Day.
Yum.
National Peace Rose Day. I don't know what the hell that is.
It's Peace Rose.
National Zipper Day and National Poem in Your Pocket Day. And you know what? I don't know what that means either. So also in honor of Joe today, I'll make several jokes and I'll laugh to myself because I think they're funny.
Damn.
Wait.
Got cold in here.
Elizabeth, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. GIT, thank God it's Thursday.
Danny?
Hello, everybody. It's also International Dance Day, so do a little dance, make a little love, get down tonight.
Chris?
Hi, I'm here.
And Ian?
I'm here too, hi.
Doesn't Ian look like he should have been in one of those videos, videos with Al Qaeda from like 20 years ago?
He does look like he's in a hostage video.
Yeah, what's his name? Jihadi Johnny should be right next to him.
Wow. Oh, because of the back. I don't know what that means. I'm really like,
criminal. Remember you at your home.
That's your house, though. Like people
with their face. I didn't say much for your decor.
A machete.
He's got the look. He's against the wall. He weighs like 80 pounds. He's bald.
Yeah.
The Also, if somebody beheads him right now, it'd be just like it.
Oh my god!
He also read a statement yesterday on yesterday's show.
It was all true.
Yeah. So we're not holding Ian hostage for those of you that are watching.
Peter and Veronica are ISIS guys. Just want you to know that.
and they haven't stole your chonies, right?
So later on in the show, we're going to be joined by the host of the podcast last week, 100 years ago. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Okay, so let's start tonight's show. Tomorrow marks Joe Biden's 100th day as president. He marked the occasion with his first address to Congress last night. So did any of you see all or part of it? And what were your thoughts? Pete, let's start with you.
Well, I watched it after the fact since we were actually on during it last night. But, you know, what I took away from it was how normal it was. You know, like how there wasn't like any like overtly partisanship. Even like some of the Republicans were, you know, like, you know, listen, both sides don't clap when the other person's team is up to bat. But occasionally they did clap, like Liz Cheney fist bumped with Biden. You know, so it seemed normal. And Ted Cruz pretended like he was sleeping because he has to be an asshole no matter what happens. So, it just was incredibly normal, which is so weird to like have to mark that down, because prior to the last 4 years, it always was just kind of normal. So, you know, I mean, I think that's what I took away from it more than anything else, was just how back to regular business everything was.
Mm-hmm. Danny, what did you think?
It was nice to have somebody who actually knew what they were talking about and said it in an eloquent, professional, and educated manner, you know, because we got a lot of crap, you know, the last 4 years. And of course, the historic moment of just having Nancy Pelosi and, you know, Kamala Harris right behind him, you know, first time ever to have two women, you know, in those positions of power. I think that was very historic.
Yeah, I mean, the last time you had two women behind a guy on TV like that, it was Tony Orlando and Dawn, and that was the 70s. So, I mean, we're talking a long time.
Chris.
He's so stupid, bro.
I mean, it would have been great if Biden had sang Tie a Yellow Ribbon, though.
This is references out of nowhere. You are Joe today. You are that was a very Joseph reference.
Joey's probably going to watch this.
If that clip doesn't go on our page, Veronica, we're missing out. That's definitely in place of Joe.
Joe knows that this is all a lovely tribute.
Yeah, absolutely.
We only kid because we love.
Yeah. It's so much.
Mm-hmm. No, you know what? I want to say, first of all, what Danny said, I'm with that as well. Like, it's great to see those two women up there. That was like cool to watch. I'm also with Pete. Like, to me, these kinds of things are, I watch them to be informed, but they're always boring. And for once, it was boring again. And I was like, oh, hey, we're back to normal. Like, people who are professional and saying speeches that, like, most of us don't give two shits about because, like, it doesn't affect us on the lower level. But, like, it's good to see that we have an actual, like, again, you know, whether or not Biden is, like, the best choice or the greatest president or whatever, like, compared to what we just had last 4 years, like, he's definitely a more professional president. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's somebody that actually fits the bill of office and actually is bringing somewhat of like honor back to the office, and doesn't look like it does like politics doesn't look like a freaking reality show anymore, which is very, very, you know, like much of a relief. It's refreshing.
Yeah, I actually took some notes. I just watched it a couple of minutes before we came on. In its entirety. And for me, I can also just compare it to the last 4 years. So I'm not going to talk about it in terms of, you know, other presidents in the past. But a couple of things that stuck out for me was the fact that he did talk about police reform and he mentioned George Floyd's name. That to me was very powerful, because you were actually putting a face to this issue. You know, I know Danny mentioned, you know, how historic it was for the two, you know, to two women. And I agree with that as well. He also talked about the assault weapon ban, especially with all the mass shootings that we've had just this past, month?
Yeah. 5 weeks.
Immigration, too. He also talked about immigration And he didn't actually talk about the challenges that his administration is facing right now at the border. But he did talk about, you know, the pathway to citizenship for about 11 million people, I believe he said. And when he told Congress, I have sent you a bill. So again, that to me was very proactive that he actually said, you know, I have done something. Now it's on you. The fact that he also told people to get vaccinated and that he acknowledged the fact that there was a pandemic, which the former president, I don't think ever did. And I know it sounds, you know, so like, okay, so yeah, he's acknowledging that there is a pandemic still happening. But, you know, I don't want to get off track, but Pete and I were just talking a couple minutes ago. I don't know if you guys have been following what's happening in India, but it is the most heartbreaking humanitarian crisis that, I mean, it, watching it, I've been in tears. And it takes a lot for me to just kind of break down like that. And you have, you know, in our country, we have everything that these people are dying, literally dying to have. We have access to vaccines. We have masks. We have the education here. We have everything. And there's still people like our former president who never acknowledged this to be a pandemic. So to me, those were a couple of the things that resonated. And I mean, I think it was a great speech overall. And yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more in a few minutes. Elizabeth, you had your hand up.
Oh, I was just, yeah, I didn't watch it. Didn't feel like I had to, which is kind of nice to not be like, oh crap, what is he going to say kind of a vibe. And one of the things I saw somebody point out, sort of separate from the actual address, is that a lot of Republicans or other conservative people are trying to have like the vaccine be credited to Trump, but they won't even take it. And they're telling people not to take it. So what is it? It's either your guy was fantastic, he got everybody a vaccine, or the vaccine's, you know, gonna make you want to ride Amtrak. One or the other. It's not, it can't be both. It can't.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing that I kind of took out of it again, it was kind of good that the pandemic caused them to have so many less people there, because if you looked on screen, almost none of the people that tried to deny the election were there. And almost none of the people that after the Capitol was attacked still got up and tried to deny the election again were in the Capitol, because it almost felt like these are the people that shouldn't be here tonight because they didn't want this to ever happen. So the pandemic kind of did them and Biden a favor, because I'm sure he didn't want them there and I'm sure they didn't want to be there. So.
Another thing too that he did, he talked about systemic racism, and he said, you know, we need to root out systemic racism that plagues this country, that plagues America, which is then, I mean, are we going to talk about Tim Scott? Should we go there? You know, when he said that there is no racism in this country.
Well, I mean, to be fair though, he didn't say there was no racism. He said that the United States is not racist.
So what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that, you know, it's semantics, and that's why you can't carefully use those words, because you cannot say that the country as a whole is racist, that there are pockets of racism here. But you know what, the fact that he said it that way and the fact that they stuck him out there was because, again, like the joke in the video was, this was them saying, look, we have a black friend. You know, that's the only reason why he was out there tonight and not somebody else, because if it had been any other president and any other time in our history, they would have had one of their many white guys come out there and give another just attack. But instead he was like, oh, no, you understand. I'm the face of the future of the Republican Party. Yeah. Some fucking future. There's one black Republican. I mean, like, come on. I mean, just don't try and tell us that there's no racism when your own party only allows you to be there, basically. So,
and he said he himself had experienced, you know, discrimination, that he had been called the N-word from liberals and from, you know, progressives or whatnot.
Oh, yeah, because, okay, you know, he knew for sure they were liberals. But, progressives. No, they must have been out there trying to save the whales and yelling the N-word at him.
Said, I don't care who called him that. I mean, in fact, if they did call him that, regardless of who it was, guess what? There's racism.
That's racism.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
The thing too is like, it's kind of what Pete's saying is like, you can say that this is not a racist country. They're just racist people within it. But that also is bullshit because you got to look at like a hot percentage of the laws that have been created was founded in racism. It was founded to keep a certain group of people oppressed in some kind of way. And a lot of these laws and things that were created are still in the system. They just reworded them shits, you know what I'm saying, and added addendums to it, but it's still the same thing. I mean, there's literally states that, that haven't passed the anti-lynching law. What is that about? So you can't say that this country is not racist without remembering those facts. So he's back right and wrong at the same time.
Mm-hmm, exactly. History tells a story.
Yeah, but Idaho doesn't want to tell you that story because they just passed a bill that says they can't, basically they can't attribute anything to racism or sexism in history.
In schools, right?
In schools in Idaho, yeah.
So is it safe to say then that we think President Biden's first 100 days have been okay? Could anybody disagree with that?
We're doing all right, all things considered. I mean,
I think pretty good, right?
There hasn't been any more rioting in the Capitol.
Yeah, I mean, there's
it's a low bar.
Yeah, he can kind of walk over. He can do his little Joe Biden run and go right over that. I love when he goes running off places. That's my favorite thing he does, is he just goes shooting off.
The only thing I would definitely say is that there are a lot of people about to lose a bet tomorrow because tomorrow is his 100th day. And I know I saw on social media a zillion people say, you watch by his 100th day, Kamala Harris will be the president, that he's just basically a Trojan horse that they put into so that they could get Kamala Harris as the president of the United States.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like, oh, that's the new Q date or whatever.
Yeah.
No, that comes back.
That amorphous, ever-shifting
line of weight.
No,
they're waiting for Lord Trump King to resod the grass in Mar-a-Lago before he can come back to office now. That's the new thing.
Okay. So a good way to judge how well these first 100 days have gone is to measure it against the first and last 100 days of his predecessor, Donald Trump. Here we go, guys. Buckle your seatbelts. In his first 100 days, fact checkers say that Joe Biden has made 67 false or misleading public comments. Donald Trump was clocked in at 511 false comments. So do you guys think that Biden has been more honest than Trump, or do you think that the media spent more time looking for Trump's mistake?
That's only over 100 days?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's five lies a day?
Yeah, wow. That's five lies a day. That's
Public lies. You got to remember.
That's true.
I think both things can be true, though. Yeah, I mean, I think that Trump did lie in a heavy clip, and they probably missed a few. But I also think that they're not trying as hard to find, you know, the times when Joe Biden might say something that may not be completely accurate.
I think because also, what if Joe Biden is saying something inaccurate or misleading? It's like kind of, to me, I'm sure people might disagree, but to me, mild by comparison to like the things Trump said that were inaccurate or misleading. Because
yeah.
Trump would just like say like literally wrong things, and like staff would have to be like, that's none of that is true. Sorry. No one freak out. Our bad.
There was one article I read last night that said that this reporter was talking about Trump's first 100 days, and they said that they knew it was going to be a completely different kind of administration when something like 10 days in, Trump referred to Barack Obama as a sick man, because he was tapping his phones. And so they said it was just so unprecedented that somebody that was in the same position would attack his predecessor the way that he did. You know, so, yeah, I'm sure both parts are true, but at the same time, you know, Trump still beat the shit out of Biden when it comes to lies.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure even, like, let's say adjusting for, I don't know, I was going to say inflation, but that's not the right word. But adjusting for biases, I'm still sure Trump said way more lies.
I mean, even if you adjust for like embellishment and it's like 300, that's still a big ass margin compared to like 660, whatever the
551 or 11, something like that.
511.
Yeah, 511.
So in his first 100 days, Joe Biden has actually fired more people than Donald Trump did. But there's a catch. All but one of his firings were Trump-appointed staff who refused to resign.
Which is like you.
When a new administration takes office. For Trump, a month into his presidency, his National Security Secretary, Michael Flynn, had to resign after it had been revealed that he had been working behind the scenes with the Russians. Less than 2 months into his presidency, Trump fired FBI Director James Comey because he was unhappy that the FBI was investigating his campaign. This led to the Mueller investigation. The biggest scandal anyone on Biden's staff has encountered was when Press Secretary Jen Psaki laughed off a question from Fox News about immigrants at the border. For Trump, this came 3 days into his presidency when Chief White House Advisor explained away Sean Spicer claiming more people were at Trump's inauguration than Obama's, which was probably false, by saying that her administration had alternative facts. So do you think alternative facts would make a good title for the entire 4 years of Trump's presidency? Elizabeth, what do you think?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, alternate universe for sure. I thought you were going to say the biggest scandal was that Major kept biting people.
I thought so too.
because if you look at Fox News, because I tried to figure out what they were complaining most about, but there was two times that apparently Jen Psaki laughed off Stephen Ducey, the son of Peter Ducey, who's the Fox and Friends host. He's now their White House reporter, and he basically goes in and tries to do a gotcha question every day. Yeah. And some days she literally just laughs at him and then goes on to somebody else. And so they actually have a running tally of the times that she's done it now. And so what happened was one day he had said something to the effect of how come it is that Kamala Harris, I'm sorry, I couldn't think of her name. I was at Vanessa. how come Kamala Harris went to a Chicago bakery instead of going to the border to deal with the crisis? And she said something to the effect of she was hungry and then started laughing. And that was a story on Fox News for three straight days.
Yeah.
I always look at Fox News every morning too to see what they're reporting. And I mean, I can't even tell you. Just go on their Instagram page alone and Breitbart's as well, because I like to compare the news from different sites. It's incredible the shit that they report. And it's not me being a Democrat. It's not me being a liberal. It's just me being smart. Like, I'm just like, really? Like, this is what you're reporting? It's amazing to me.
I was just also going to say the frustrating person he hasn't fired yet is the post office guy, the postmaster general. But there's some like convoluted like way he was appointed, which is like tradition or whatever. So like, it sucks he can't oust this guy who's like absolutely keeps fucking over the post office.
He added in like members of the board of advisory, so eventually they will fire him because they're the ones who can do it.
Oh, good. Thank God.
And so they now have the majority of the members on the board, but I think he's kind of just doing one of these things where it's like, let's not do everything all at once.
Right, you got to pace yourself.
Let's raid Rudy, and then let's do this.
Everybody, like, believe me, I want radical change for a lot of things, but man, you can't burn through too much shit. You can't burn too bright too soon, baby. You gotta pay. There's 4 years of this. You gotta pace yourself.
Philip is saying online that the pink slip must have been lost in the mail.
Hey! Well done.
So I want to talk a little bit about... Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was saying he mailed it to himself, so he knows it's not coming. He's like, cancel that shit real quick.
So I want to talk a little bit about the economy. The stock market rose 1,113.26 points during Trump's first 100 days. In the first 98 days of the Biden presidency, it went up to 2,796.55 points. That's almost 2.5 times more during a pandemic. Now, Trump warned us that if Biden was elected, he would cause the economy to go into a depression. Do you think he probably got that one wrong? Pete.
I don't think he's going to.
you know, the thing is that Trump is smart enough to realize that once the pandemic ends, mm-hmm. people are going to go out and spend money again, so the economy is going to get better. So, you know, it just all it took was an idiot not to have a pandemic just drag on for another year to fix the economy. So that was a scare tactic no matter what, because guess what? I'm going to say something terrible here. If Trump was still in office, the economy would have gotten better, too. You know, it just would have gotten better slower because nobody would have been vaccinated yet.
Yeah, fair is fair.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. It's, you know, as much as people are like, oh, the president impacts the economy, but they do not set and, like, decide how well or how poorly the economy will do. They don't regulate it that way, which I don't feel like people always get.
Yeah. But it does. It must burn Trump's ass that the stock market went up almost 3,000 points in 98 days.
That's we're talking numbers. That's a significant compared to his shit.
Yeah. So there have been roughly 172,000 U.S. deaths from COVID since Biden took office. In Trump's final 100 days, roughly 187,000 people died. 16.5 million COVID vaccination doses were administered between December 14th, 2020 and January 20th, 2021, an average of 515,625 vaccinations a day. 217,175,723 vaccinations have been administered since Biden took office for an average of 2,193,694 vaccinations a day, or 1,677,069 more than Trump's administration. So do you think that Trump would have had as much success if he had gotten reelected? What are your thoughts on that, Elizabeth?
No, but also, they keep saying people aren't going to get your second shot. Go get your fucking second shot. Seriously. I know everyone freaked you out about side effects. Grow the fuck up and go get your fucking shot. You can't go out and have fun and do all the fucking things you want to do so badly that you're whining that you can't do until you go get the second fucking dose. It's fine. Like, I'm sorry you're like, oh, I feel sick for a couple days. Better than fucking dying, man. Go get your fucking second shot.
You know what? As someone who had terrible side effects from the first dose, I can't wait to get my second one.
And it's over with.
And I'm bracing myself. I'm like, okay, if I get sick again or if I feel like crap for 48 hours, I'll be okay. But I just don't understand it. And it goes back to what I said earlier in the show today. Look at other countries. Look at what people are going through. Look at the situation in India. We have everything here. My mom has been stuck in Mexico. She hasn't been able to come home because she's still waiting for her second shot. Mm-hmm. You know, and she has dual citizenship, so she could easily come here and be fully vaccinated. But I just don't want her to get on a plane right now because she's older. Yeah. And she's like, I'm still waiting for a second shot to come. And it's still not there. And she's in a city. She's in a big city. So, I mean, we have everything here and people are still refusing to be vaccinated. It's amazing how stupid.
Yeah, because I'm not even talking about the people who are like anti-vax. That's a whole separate
problem. We could do
the people who are like you're going to be, I'm sorry, you're going to be mildly inconvenienced for a couple
days. Yeah, your arm's going to hurt. You're going to have chills. Okay.
You might have chills or fever. Go fucking lie on the couch like we've all been doing this whole fucking time, except not me, because I've never owned a couch.
We're going to lose that family audience today.
I'm sorry, I'm mad. I'm mad
you
that people are just like, it's like the easiest fucking thing in the world. And you already did it the first time. Why be such a fucking baby about like, God, like Veronica said, this is, you know, when people are like, oh, there's people who are dying, you know. This is like literally that's actual scenario and you're being this fucking childish about it and ignorant and stupid when like, and like for whatever reason, we haven't been giving India vaccines, right? Like
I think Biden announced he was going to send some over there, but again, I mean, I think they're populated.
Look, the reality of this is, I mean, as much as Trump wants to, from the cave that he's in, say that the reason why everybody's getting back, like all the vaccinations we had, is because of him.
Yeah.
It's just not true, because 2 weeks into Biden's presidency, he bought the 200 million extra doses of Pfizer. He's the one who negotiated a new deal with Moderna to get to overload us with vaccinations.
Yeah.
He's the one who got Johnson & Johnson approved. Like, so, you know, and so all this stuff is all a moot point, because we are in a better place today because Biden did what he did. I mean, sure. Do you want to give Trump any credit? Yeah, he did the least possible thing a human being could do. You know what he did? He told pharmaceutical companies to do something that'll make them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then they did it. Right. You know, and so he did the least possible thing he could do, and it worked. And so, yeah, so you want to give him credit for something, that's what you give him credit for. But 100 days into this, you know, you have to say, if nothing else, we're not constantly on the precipice of some kind of crisis. And I think that's all you kind of have to take from this last 100 days. Mm-hmm. You know, the things we didn't put in the notes, but within 100 days, he had already threatened North Korea. You know, his first time he referred to him as Rocket Man happened somewhere in the 70s of days. And I don't know if everybody remembers, but there was a moment in time when people thought that North Korea might actually launch a missile at the western part of the United States.
Yeah,
that was within the first 100 days of Trump's presidency.
I remember that.
Yeah, you know, within the first two days, he created a Muslim ban that kept people from the country till it got struck down. So what did he do? He added one country that wasn't a Muslim country so that he could get around it. You know, it's like just the amount of chaos that went on, it's not here anymore. And you know, whether you were a fan of whatever policies Trump, you know, adopted because somebody told him to, or whatever, or you like the entertainment value of him, this is how politics should be. It should be boring. It should be normal. We shouldn't care about it. I shouldn't want to watch the news. I don't watch Meet the Press on Sunday anymore because it doesn't really matter anymore. You know, it's like, that's how it should be.
Yeah, Danny, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, what Elizabeth was saying, you know, people not getting their second vaccine. I know some people feel like, you know, people have lied to them about the effects or whatever. No one's lying to you. Science is, well, I read this. Science is not the truth. Science is finding the truth. When science changes its opinion, it didn't lie to you. It learned more. And that's what's going on. You know, they learned that, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you know, might give some people clots. And, you know, now they're putting it out there. Now it's been, you know, now it's a side effect and people know about it. So you just have to be careful. The fact of the matter is that the vaccines are saving lives and people need to go out there so that more things can go open. Because frankly, we got invited to a concert at the SoFi. A bunch of Cedars people, and I think Kamala Harris is going to be there, J-Lo, a bunch of other people. But you can only go if you've been fully vaccinated before April 15, I believe. So I'm thinking there's going to be a lot more events like this. And if you're not vaccinated, you're going to miss out on some really good, fun things.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
That's oppression, man. You can't tell me what to do.
So our guest is going to come on. And actually, I just want to just reiterate something. When Pete talked about Rocket Man and Trump, for those of you that don't know that story, he was talking about Kim Jong-un, not my man Elton John.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get them on. Most news-oriented podcasts are concerned with the biggest news and events taking place today. That's not the case for the podcast Last Week 100 Years Ago, in that the host of the show, Isaac and Michael, talk about the hottest news stories from the last week, 100 years ago. Please welcome Isaac and Michael. Hi, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, yeah.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us and for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
So, guys, tell us about your podcast. It's such a unique concept. Who wants to start?
So, it's definitely an interesting and fun podcast. Isaac approached me with the idea, and I think we originally got it from Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and it was just pretty much like, let's see if we can kind of roll with that, but with events that happened 100 years ago.
Yeah. So in my current job, I work in documentaries and I deal with a lot of like archival research. So I wanted to bring that in to something else that Mike and I both love, which is comedy. And so that's where it came from.
Okay. So now, is there a reason why you chose 100 years as opposed to like 50 or 200 years? Why was 100 years the magic number?
I think it just kind of rings better, to be honest. Yes.
That's fair to say. So there's an old saying, no matter how much things change, they stay the same. Tell us the things that are most similar between the news from 100 years ago and the things that seem to be most different to the news today. Have you found any similarities, differences that you can talk about?
Well, one thing that was kind of interesting is some of these articles that we're reading, like they give really mundane news articles. Like, for example, it'll be like, Mary is going on vacation to go and see her sister. Or like, Tom's coming back from visiting Arizona. And it almost seems like some of these articles are like proto like Twitter feeds or like proto Facebook posts. But instead, like, people are getting them just from the newspapers. And so that's one thing I think is kind of interesting, is that instead of having like social media like we do today, it's kind of what the newspaper was back then.
Interesting.
Okay. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the biggest stories that you've covered, or some like maybe the most interesting ones that you've had on your podcast?
Something that I really find interesting is that there are a lot of these newspapers, because we're grabbing from smaller papers too, they tend to have like weird kind of slice of life stories. Like one of my favorites was this guy who's like an insurance underwriter, and he went with a bunch of other underwriters to an Ohio prison for some reason to watch a church choir or a prison choir. And one of the convicts turned out to be his son that he hadn't seen in 14 years. But it was also such like a really small article, just like in the corner of the paper. Like I would think that would be like a bigger story. Like, your son has been found in this prison, but it was such a small thing.
Well, another story that I think was just interesting is there was two stories from two different newspapers, but they both had the same like theme or topic. One took place in Chicago, and the other I think was in Los Angeles. And they both dealt with cashiers being robbed on the way to the bank. So I guess that used to be like a problem back then. So if you were the cashier for whatever store you worked at, you couldn't just transfer the money online. You had to actually physically bring it to the bank. So I guess it was like a common problem that if you're the cashier and you left the store, there was a good chance that you can get mugged on the way to the bank. So it was just interesting that on the same day, 100 years ago, I think it was April 13th or something like that. But two people simultaneously got mugged on the way to the bank.
Wow, that's so interesting. Let me open it up to the panel now. Does anybody have any questions for Michael or Isaac? Yes, Pete, let's start with you.
Hey guys, thanks so much for joining us. So I think we're so spoiled by the fact that when things happen, we know about them almost immediately because of the 24-hour news cycle. Did you ever look at any stories that kind of rolled out over several days in different places, like this place got that story this day, but then it didn't really kind of fall into place until the next day here and then the next day there, so anything like that?
It is kind of interesting. When we come across a big story, I've noticed, like the Clara Hammond one, Mike, where this woman who murdered this guy that she was having an affair with for like 14 years. You'll notice news tends to travel pretty quickly. The big papers will publish it, and then all the smaller papers will pick it up like within that week or the next few days. They're really kind of on the ball, it seems, in terms of getting those articles out.
They kind of seemed like week-long events, because you would read something that took place on Monday, and then on like Thursday or even Friday of the next week, like they're still talking about it.
Okay.
Elizabeth.
I'm big into history. I'm actually the American Girl Dolls podcast. They brought up in the Molly era, the World War II one, they mentioned somebody sent in the article of like their grandma's like ninth birthday party was in the newspaper. It's like a 9-year-old girl's birthday party was in the paper. So that's hilarious. That they're like, Tom's visiting Arizona. What got you guys into history in the first place, like as kids or youngsters?
Oh, so honestly, like if I'm going real deep, like how far back does it go? Like the very first moment that I realized, like had an interest for history was probably like back in preschool. We had like a toy castle set. And I was like, whoa, that's cool. And so from that time, I started reading a lot of medieval history. And then once I was like in middle school, I started reading more history books. Just I was into like medieval stuff because like oh, knights, like castles, that's cool. And then as I got older, I would read more of like the politics of ancient Rome or like biographies of like people in history or former U.S. presidents. And so just kind of, I think it's just always sort of been like an interest that I've had. I enjoy the perspective of it a lot because we're spoiled or like have only our bubble of being alive at this time. And so being able to have that looking glass to see how things were back then, like you start noticing a lot of similarities. Like there's like character tropes or certain types of personalities that existed back then that still exist today, or just repeats of events that happened. And so to me, that's, it just seems like a big story, and I just like stories. And so.
Chris?
So judging from some of the things that you've already spoken about, it seems like life back then wasn't that entertaining. Have y'all like gone back and found a week where like literally nothing went on, where you like there was no kind of story in the paper? Because if we're talking about like 9-year-old birthday parties in the paper, there has to be one day. Because like, I know we're kind of spoiled where there's always something going on, like even in entertainment, like there's something to news about. So like, was there any day that just y'all couldn't find anything worth talking about?
I think there are definitely slow weeks, but I think what we've noticed is that sometimes they'll like not necessarily make up news, but just like find things to put in the paper, like the Tom went to the store, came back from Arizona, that type of thing. They'll also tend to write like longer form like editorials, I guess, but it's really just an ad for something, but it's like an entertaining story that they can promote. I mean, yeah, there are definitely slow weeks, but we haven't come across too many yet.
There's been some like newspapers, because we pull from a large source of different newspapers, and so there's some that I'll pick up and I'll be like, hey, this one's not too good, but then you'll read the next one, you're like, there's a lot going on in this one. I think it also depends on just one paper we grabbed.
Real quick before I just want to know too, also, like, so far in your research and things of that nature, where do you think it started to where, you know, we got the news how we have it daily now, where there's like, you know, crime reported and weather and stuff like that. Like, at what point do you get to like the local news where that was like an occurrence and not just like big stuff was in the paper?
I think it for them, like back then, it was like local news first and then like bigger stories. Mm-hmm. Like they're like crime stories are they're almost in every article we write or we read. Mm-hmm. And I think like the big stories are the ones that had to have been like something crazy. Like, for example, Isaac brought up the affair where the mistress murdered the person she was having an affair with. But that person happened to be like a big politician. And so that grabbed everyone's attention. So like those articles you'll find in multiple papers and they're the big story, but then everything else is a lot more like local stuff.
Pete, did you have another question before
it's kind of almost off of a little bit of what Chris was just asking, but was there any level of sensationalism in the news back then, kind of, you know, similar to what we have today, or is that more of a modern thing than it was 100 years ago?
Like sensation, just for like an actress or famous person, or just like a blown out story that's just ridiculous.
Well, you know, like what they say, you know, when you talk about a murder, tell me about the blood, not about the case. You know, like kind of was there any of that back then?
I think that's almost in every article we read. There was this one article I read that was just such a small thing. This kid who was 14 stole a cream puff from a grocery store. And he ended up going to trial because there was this whole article about it. It was like policemen standing nearby, and it was written like all because of the cream puff had cream oozing cut from its core and all that stuff. And it was like, lots of showmen.
Oh my goodness.
Those would be good cream puffs.
So dramatic.
Danny, did you have a question? Then I'll go back to Elizabeth.
Yeah. Chris was saying how there may be a slow week here or there, but is there something you're looking forward to? Because when you say, you know, if it's 100 years ago, we're into the 20s. So I definitely like the Roaring 20s era. You know, so I'm I guess I want to see, you know, hear from you what you're looking forward to covering.
I think it was Al Capone. I think he was in the 1920s.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be excited when those come up. I don't think they have yet. So that I'm looking forward to. I don't think we've gotten... I think because they talk about the Depression a lot, so I'm not sure if it was just starting to happen or if we're actually in it, because they do talk about like strikers and in a lot of like low wages and stuff like that. But one thing that I think is kind of interesting, like stories to look forward to, is like if you look at the international stage, like you could read articles of like the U.S. is like focusing a lot during like the Russian Revolution at this time, because this is like when it's happening. Or they'll talk about like the U.S.'s relationship with Japan. And so, you know, fast forward 20 years, you're like, oh, I know how this is going to play out. But it's just interesting reading these as they're happening. So that's sort of some stories we're kind of like looking forward to in a way where it's just interesting seeing them unfold.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Yeah, here I go. Oh, no, this is not going to go how you guys are thinking it's going right now. Like as far as international relations, are there like specific regions of the country or like specific newspapers you prefer, or do you try to go like across the country as a whole?
When we grab them, we try to grab from all over. We have been grabbing some. I'm currently in Los Angeles. Mike is in Denver. So we grab some newspapers just from around there because we're both familiar with the areas and can speak a little bit more to that. But mostly it's just all over the country.
Pete.
I just had one more question. In modern times, you know, when they look at the presidents, you know, most popular or best president, worst presidents, Woodrow Wilson is often considered to be one of the worst presidents because he led us into the Depression. And I guess he would have been the president around this time now, 100 years ago. Were newspapers highly critical of presidents back then the way they are today? Or was it more reserved?
So we actually came in, I don't know if we got many Wilson. We've gotten a lot of Harding. No, it doesn't seem like they're that critical. Like there was this one, I think it was like right when Harding was coming into office, and they're like, he's going to take a 2-week vacation and just kind of like hang out before he gets into office. And it was also like right around the time Biden was about to get in. And it's like, is that really what you want your president to be doing?
Yeah, I guess.
He don't want to work too hard in those first few weeks.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Any final questions? Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Can you just tell our audience how often you release episodes? We'll have your information on our social media.
Yeah, we release biweekly, so every 2 weeks.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, and come back anytime.
Yeah, thanks for having
us. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, so moving on to our final segment. Sure, it's nice to be considered to be the very best at something. That being said, being the 100th best isn't all that bad either, since that means that there's only 99 people better at what you do. So with that in mind, and in keeping with tonight's theme, we thought it might be fun to close out the show with Ranker.com's 100th best in various categories. Peter's going to give you 3 facts about each person, and you're going to try to figure out what he's talking about. Go ahead, Pete. I'm going to hand it over to you.
Yeah. So again, what I did was I went on Ranker.com, who does, in case you haven't ever been on Ranker.com, it's the best place to find lists for any possible subject. Like if you want the 100 best shoelaces, there's probably a list for it on Ranker. So what I did was I looked up certain topics, athletes, stand-up comedians, films, television, that kind of thing. And I went to find out who they ranked as the 100th best in all these categories. So the first category, and let me put it this way, for the first couple of these, I don't expect anybody to get these right until maybe the last question. Each fact is going to be a little bit more revealing about the person. The last one will be the most obvious. So if anybody can guess who these people are, just yell. So our first up is the athlete who came in at number 100, the 100th best athlete of all time. So the 100th best athlete was an American basketball player who is the all-time NCAA Division I scorer with 3,367 points scored in his college career. Does anybody want to take a guess on who it is?
What year?
I didn't give you a year. He's the all-time highest scorer for the NCAA Division I. Any guesses?
Is it
okay? So now I'll give you the second guess. He played for three NBA teams: the Atlanta Hawks, the New Orleans / Utah Jazz, and at the end of his career, the Boston Celtics. In a 10-year professional career, anybody want to guess yet?
Is it Wilt Chamberlain?
No, it's not Will Chamberlain. Okay, so our final hint is his nickname was Pistol Pete. Anybody?
Oh, fuck. Oh,
yeah. That's not all fuck.
I know who it is, though, but I don't know his real name.
Well, it was Pistol Pete Maravich.
Maravich. That was his last name. I knew. Yes. I know Pistol Pete, but I didn't know.
Left hand double mark.
I'd like to be Pistol Pete now. Can we
call
him Pistol Pete from the front on?
Forever in the annals of history.
Okay, so the next thing I looked up was the 100 best male stand-up comedians. I wanted to do 100 best female comedians, but they haven't gotten to that many yet. So
that's terrible.
I knew that was coming.
That's been 100
Holy
yet.
Shit.
You, so we'll come back in like 10 years when we
wow.
get back.
I'll say, there probably what a are fucking 100, big move. But they just... Aren't
like Elizabeth, you would probably be 61 right now.
Hell yeah. Woo, top 60. Yeah. You're top 70, I guess.
Yay.
So I'm going to tell you right away, there's no way you're going to get this.
Oh, buddy.
Even though I'm going to give you three clues, because I had no idea who this was reading it. So our first clue was that this British comic, his first job was a commentator on BBC 4 radio in the UK. Okay. Anybody?
Alan Carr?
No, it's not Alan Carr.
Is it Jimmy Carr?
No, it's not Jimmy Carr either.
All right.
It's not the band The Cars either. Okay, so the second fact about the 100th best male stand-up comic is that he wrote the Holy Flying Circus, a fictional account surrounding the release of Monty Python's Life of Brian. Anybody?
So he's not in Monty Python, but he wrote about Monty Python.
No, he was not in Monty Python.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, so no. Okay, well, here's the most obvious answer, and it still didn't help me at all. He has won 2 primetime Emmys for his writing on the show Veep.
Oh, Armando Iannucci? That's the creator of Veep.
No, it was actually Tony Roach.
Oh, okay.
Did you know who Tony Roach was?
No.
Okay. No. He is our 100th greatest stand-up comic of all.
God bless you, Tony Roach.
I call bullshit.
Rankers making hard decisions. Thank you.
Just so you know, Richard Belzer in the 70s. So Tony Roach was at 100. Now let's go on to the 100th greatest album of all time, according to them.
Okay.
So the 100th greatest album was a 1980 album that was produced by Tony Visconti. Anybody want to
guess? Scary Monsters.
Holy cow! You got it on the first shot. It was Scary Monsters.
Bowie, Scary Monsters.
Bowie.
Yeah,
oh, shit.
They had a very long storied career working together.
Yeah, I mean,
Scotty produced his last record.
The other two facts were its two biggest singles were Ashes to Ashes and Fashion, and that the album was by David Bowie. So,
yeah, I know my David Bowie. I'm sorry. I have a giant David Bowie poster in the closet right now.
You must be getting good sleep in that room.
No.
Okay, so our next question is about the 100th best TV show of all time, according to Ranker.com. The 100th best TV show of all time. And no, it's not Little House on the Prairie. That was in the 70s as well. Okay, so this CBS action show ran for 7 seasons from 1966 to 1973. Anybody want to guess?
Y5O.
Mission Impossible?
Magnum P.I.
Well, one of the two of you is right. Can we guess which one of you?
Mission Impossible.
It's Mission Impossible. Yeah. So, yes. So, Woo. Elizabeth got that on the first try. And the other facts about it were it starred Peter Graves, Barbara Baines, Peter Lupus, Martin Landau, and Greg Morris. And it turned into a highly successful movie series in 1996.
And it's okay. My ringtone.
Yeah. Well, our final 100th best, because we're keeping to our theme for tonight, is the 100th best movie of all time. 100th best movie of all time. And this one might be easy because the facts were pretty easy. So for our 100th best movie of all time, this 1990 film was based on a Philip K. Dick short story called We Can Rent It for Wholesale.
Oh, Total Recall.
Look at you. Oh, you got it on your first shot.
Philip K. Dick, that's my jam, bro. I know all of it.
Yes, it was Total Recall. I mean, just so we know that the other facts I was going to give you, the film was directed by Dutch director Peter Verhoeven. Starred Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sharon Stone.
Is it Paul Verhoeven?
Paul Verhoeven,
yeah.
Paul, not Peter, right?
No, Paul.
Yes, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Peter was home that week.
And that's the only Total Recall that anybody who's a true Total Recall fan accepts, because that's the best one.
Colin Farrell.
It's cool, but like Total Recall, the original with Schwarzenegger, that's the song.
I never saw the remake, but it got actually pretty good reviews. If I remember.
It did.
Nobody saw it, but.
Yeah, nobody saw it.
It's so different from the short story, anyway.
People didn't see it in theaters, but then they watched it after, and they were like, "Oh, it's actually pretty good."
Well, since it starred Colin Farrell, it probably was about a guy who drank too much, passed out, couldn't remember things.
You know, he's cleaned up. Let it go.
Oh, man, he's turned over in a week.
It's all about healthy living.
This was at that point in time when he was still doing those kind of things.
No, actually, I think it was after that.
Really? I don't remember when it ended. See, that's the thing. I just remember he used to drink a lot, get into fights, and have sex with models.
Like in the 2000s. And then like 2010s forward, he's been, I think, relatively clean living.
So now he doesn't do any of that stuff anymore?
Nope.
What a boring life.
I know.
You leave him alone now, okay? Don't mess with
him. Cry himself to sleep on his piles of actor money.
Johnny Depp to stop spending $100,000 a month on fucking wine, then maybe we'll
fucking yes.
Holy shit.
So that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow.
Rocket Battle tomorrow, don't forget.
Rocket Battle, we have a fun show planned for tomorrow. We'll see you back here again tomorrow, 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe.
Get vaccinated.